She has a background in business, in fact, holds an MBA from the UConn Business School. She is a longtime state senator from the 26th Senatorial District, and she also serves on several very influential committees over at the state legislature, Senate ranking member of the General Assembly's Transportation Committee, Education Committee, and she's also a highly respected member of the Judiciary Committee as a ranking member, serves as a member of the General Assembly's Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, and is also Chief Deputy Minority Leader. That said, it is always a pleasure to welcome to our program Senator Tony Boucher. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan. It's always good to be with you.
Senator, first of all, what does it feel like knowing that you'll be going into the new session in January tied 18-18 rather than being in the minority?
Well, it's a new day, isn't it? Contrary to what the national election was like, the Republicans actually gained a number of seats in a year when they were expected to lose seats. In fact, we gained three in the Senate, putting us at a tie historic, hasn't happened since the 1800s, 18 to 18, and gained eight seats of the 12 to take over in the House. So the trend for us was decidedly about the state and the state economic situation, which is pretty dim right now.
Now, the Democrats are saying the reason that they lost power in the Senate was because of all of the outside money that was spent on the Republican campaigns. What do you say to that?
I don't agree with that at all, because I was on the ground with seven towns, and it, quite frankly, my district voted more than any other district in all of Connecticut. You should see it by the vote count I got. You know, it was the highest in the entire state. So we are the same size, but our voters voted more often, and they're very politically involved. I have seven towns. All seven of them voted for Hillary Clinton, but they voted for me by a wide margin on the Republican side when it came to state races alone. And I will tell you, no outside money is worth spent in my district at all. And I will, say that they all, to a person, were very dismayed, very disappointed at the direction our state is going with. They're very disappointed in the leadership and at the top of the hierarchy we have here. They don't like what's happening, and too many people have told me that they would never have considered moving, but they are now. Our businesses are really struggling. Our real estate agents are beside themselves. Never has it been this bad for them.
Well, that's interesting, because newly elected State Representative Dr. William Pettit was on the Fox Business Channel this morning, and he said that he's hearing from businesses they're very concerned about these projected long-term deficits that are into the billions of dollars. And, you know, these businesses want that issue addressed. What do you hear?
Oh, absolutely. There isn't any business in my district that hasn't felt it, whether you're a dry cleaners, a restaurant, a builder, you name it. Even the investment world is really struggling right now. What we have staring at us is another $1 billion. In fact, it's looking more like a $1.5 billion deficit in the next 2017-18 year, and another 1.6 in the following year. You're talking about well over $3 billion in deficits, and this is after historic tax increases, historic tax revenues brought in, and yet they're short. And they're short because they're spending too much. The governor extended for five more years a state pension deal that, if had not done that, would have resulted in a $3.1 billion savings to the state. And yet he let that slip through his hands, and allowing one large special interest group to dominate what fiscal policy is in our state.
Well, that seems to be the 64,000-pound gorilla in the room, and that's these fixed pension costs. How does
Right.
the state tackle that, Senator?
You know, it means that everyone has to sit down and do something serious about it. And that was done in our next-door neighbor, Democratic state, democratically led Rhode Island. They did. They weren't popular, and they, in fact, the treasurer became governor, but she was not popular, still probably isn't popular with the state pension folks and the state unions, but it had to be done. They told them the truth, that it was going insolvent. Let's face it, our state's fixed costs have gone up from 37% to 53% this year. And a lot of it has to do with that area of state government that is exceedingly expensive. It's a defined benefit pension plan, which has gone away both in our municipalities throughout Connecticut and certainly in other states. It's not been heard of. It's very, very expensive. In fact, all the borrowing that's occurring as they move things out into the future, They have borrowed so much just for paying operating costs. Our debt service is $257 million more this year than last year alone. This is not a good situation. They've allowed these pension liabilities, by the way, to go underfunded, oftentimes with the approval of the unions who wanted to keep their benefits high and just, you know, borrow against the future of what they need. But sooner or later, someone has to pay this. And we have been proposing alternatives to fix this year after year. And they have hidden their heads in the sand and kicked the can down the road, and now they're staring at a serious situation that has to be dealt with, I mean, right away, not January. And we've called for them to come into session. And by the way, that 18 to 18 tie should give us a stronger voice in this. But yet they can't seem to come to grips with the fact that now they have to share leadership and seem a bit reluctant to come to the table on this.
Yeah, that's a side story, but certainly
right.
A big story when you think about it. Okay,
sure.
What needs to be done, or actually, if nothing is done, if the state unions don't reopen negotiations, if they don't return to the bargaining table, what happens?
Well, things are being cut already. And I apologize for the
tell you
call.
What, grab yourself a drink of water. Take a break and grab yourself a drink of water.
Actually, we're already looking at tuition hikes. We're looking at care for kids supplements being cut. That's individuals that are low income that need that to be able to put their kids in daycare while they go to work. You're talking about across the board cuts to state services. And the governor even now suggesting, quote-unquote, small tax increases. And you know what that means.
Yep. Well, among the things that the governor is recommending to various departments is to come up with a budget that is reduced by 10%. That doesn't mean it's going to be cut in these individual departments by 10%, but come up with a budget that reduces spending by 10%. That said, even if these state agencies did that, would it be enough to cover Connecticut's financial situation?
Well, that's the big question. A 10% cut even in personnel may not even be enough. This is really a serious situation. When DMV is talking about shutting down an entire office and reducing services for the public, and the governor about his supposedly small tax increases, this is absolutely the wrong thing to do. Instead of 10% across the board, because there may be some critical services that should not be cut. In fact, you know, higher education should not be making it more expensive for kids to access higher education when they need it more than ever before to get a good job. And they can't afford more debt themselves to access higher education. They should be looking at programs they can shut altogether. They have to be looking there. And so instead of keeping everything in place as it is, they need to really examine areas of government that they can stop funding altogether and save some costs. But more than importantly, you know that there's at least 13 state contracts that are up for negotiations. Right now, there are businesses that haven't had an increase in their salaries since the recession, since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And why should we continue to add salary increases 1, 2, and 3 years out when right now we're in a crisis situation? That needs to stop right then and there.
But even if all of that stops, can this issue, and it's a big issue, as you said, by the way, the current budget is in deficit. The
Correct.
Next year's budget, $1.5 billion. It's predicted the year after that will be in the hole, another $1 billion plus. Can this overall situation, these continuous budget deficits, be addressed without the state unions reopening contract talks and saying we're going to have to make some concessions?
They have to come to the table. There is no way around this, Dan. They have to come to the table. As I said, there's 13 contracts that are up for negotiations now. Okay, can be done. This is completely on the onus of the executive branch. They're doing the negotiations, and the onus is on the legislative branch to approve or disapprove those contracts. UConn rescinded their contract when they saw the opposition that they were going to get in the legislature. And this is exactly the direction the rest of the different bargaining units need to be looking at. They have to come to the table. There has to be a realization. And the leadership in the House, those that are in complete control that may be beholding or may be working at those unions, need to say that, listen, things are this bad. We can't keep going the way we've been going, and we need to compromise. the only way is by compromise. And quite frankly, the only way to reduce those future liabilities and those future deficits is to structurally change the costs, the fixed cost now. And it will save money into the future, at least $2 to $3 billion. So we can balance this budget if they do the right thing and they have the courage to sit down and do it. Certainly everyone else in the state has already done it. You can't go back to the same people that you have taxed to the hilt, you've regulated to the hilt, you've taken away services to them, you're making it more difficult for moms and dads to get to work that are low income because you're taking away their daycare subsidy. This is exactly the wrong place to go. You're taking away services for the disabled. These are things that government should be absolutely doing. And instead, what are they doing? Investing in athletic organizations and garages and private sector, getting involved in private sector 401k plans. You know, I don't know what they're thinking, but they have to sit down and take a look at what their core responsibilities are and be able to fund them by reducing those fixed costs. We can no longer afford defined benefit plans for state employees. We can no longer afford $2 for a prescription drug or $15 for any doctor. And look at the health care costs for the private sector individuals. They have to spend down $7,000 a year before they even get a benefit of their health care plan. Well, state employees don't have that, and they also don't contribute hardly anything to their own pensions. That has to change. It has to change now. We are in a crisis mode, Dan, and I know I'm on a rant right now, but we have to be because we really, truly are in a very bad situation, and it's got to be confronted.
You know what's sad about it, Senator? We have sat here and had these interviews year after year talking about how the state is at a crossroads, and it was as if some people were tone deaf and said it would never happen, but we are at that point, aren't we?
We certainly are, and the votes show that. In a presidential year, Republicans usually lose seats. We gained an astronaut, and quite frankly, if this was a gubernatorial year and not a presidential year, we would have taken over the House and Senate without question. And then things would have dramatically changed because right now, the only thing that seems to count is having the right votes on your side of this issue.
Now, these 13 bargaining units that you talk about, do you know when their contracts expire with the state?
Well, I just know that the negotiating period was this year, and it is up to the governor's office to negotiate them, and then they're supposed to bring it to the House and Senate for approval to the Appropriations Committee first, and they either give it an up or down vote. In the past, the Democratic leadership prevented a vote because they knew if they didn't vote on them, they would automatically be approved by just sitting on the calendar without action. That's kind of walking away from your responsibility and not having your fingerprints on it. You know, we have put in, you know, many proposals to force a vote. At least people would know how they were being, how this was being voted on. So that is one of the things they can be doing right now to help the situation, and that is do what they're supposed to do, vote these contracts up or down. And we'll see what's in them. At least we can read, you know, what has been decided. But truly, what is disappointing is when the governor said, well, past administrations just gave, you know, the state labor unions an extension for their benefits and their pensions out 11 years. What does he do? He says, we'll never do that again. But yet they've been extended for 5 more years, precluding some really important savings that could be garnered. And that decision has to be revisited. And you say, well, how can you break a contract? It's already been decided. Let me tell you, City of Hartford and all of the unions came to our finance committee meeting when someone proposed eliminating the bargaining units for a period of a couple of years until they were able to be solvent. And, you know, it got them to the table right away. Well, you could do the very same thing in the state of Connecticut. You can say, listen, we're in a crisis. We're going to possibly change the rules of the game in the collective bargaining agreements. And I would imagine that they would sit down and say, well, let's talk about what we can do. If the Democratic treasurer of Rhode Island could sit everyone down and say, look, if this is the actuarial tables, we're going to be insolvent unless we make this, this, and this change. They finally reluctantly had to agree, and she ran for governor, you know, against, you know, a lot of opposition from those labor unions, and she won the day. She is now governor of Rhode Island. People have been writing about it in the Wall Street Journal. You know, one bright spot in all of blue New England. They did the right thing. Well, Connecticut can do the right thing. The governor has it in his power. He still has control of the House, and he has even a tie-breaking vote with the lieutenant governor in the Senate. They can get something done if they had the will to do it and they really cared for the plight of the people in the state and the businesses in the state.
Well, Senator, you talk about Rhode Island, and of course it's a focal point because it's our next door neighbor, but even Wisconsin, a blue state, Scott Walker took on the unions because he had no choice 6 years ago, and he was successful, and not only that, he won in a recall vote, and then he won in a re-election bid. So he had to confront the unions head on, not because he had something against the unions. It's just that no. Wisconsin was going to collapse financially
Absolutely.
If he didn't do anything.
Absolutely, and it really benefits the employees in the long run. It makes them more secure. It keeps their benefits secure. This is really to help them as well, and that hasn't been explained in the right fashion. Really, the difference between Wisconsin and Illinois and Indiana and Ohio and other places where they're working hard to make changes is that here in Connecticut, we actually have labor unions as voting members of the legislature, both as state representatives and state senators and so forth, and now in positions of leadership that are, you know, obviously that can be quite a conflict of interest. And so this is what, you know, the public needs to be watching closely to see how that how these issues move through. And is it appropriate for those that are actually being paid a salary and compensated for, you know, a particular position to be the deciding factor in whether, you know, a reform takes place or not with regards to all of these benefits? I mean, Connecticut has reached a place now where there is no other choice. There really isn't. And if they keep cutting services and if they keep losing people and losing businesses, this is just going to get even worse. And some people think it can't get any worse.
Well, just to illustrate your point, the next Speaker of the House in the state of Connecticut, if the voting goes according to prediction, is the head of a union, isn't he?
I believe so. I believe the SEIU, which is, you know, negotiates a lot of the labor contracts for the state, it does appear to be a difficult position to be both leading and also to be a part of something like that. It is a difficult situation. Now, with the numbers being so much closer now, even in the House, they're only four votes away from changing, you know, the party leadership. And now in the Senate, where there is no majority, there is no minority. The state Senate is 18 to 10, so there is no majority or minority there. It's an actual tie, with the lieutenant governor breaking a tie on bills that are legislated. There's right now ongoing discussions about what does this mean from a rules perspective, but that has yet to be decided. But certainly on the House side, you know, if enough moderate Democrats were to change their view on, you know, the leadership makeup, and enough Republicans were to have a coalition, that could happen if things get that bad. Let's hope it doesn't come to any of that. Let's hope that, you know, the good and common sense individuals will say, you know, this is what's appropriate, and the individuals that have a conflict would step aside in some of those discussions. Let's hope that that's what happens, because the votes are getting very narrow, and it was very difficult for the governor to get his budget through last time with only one or two votes really in the House, and now with eight more votes on the other side of the aisle, it's going to be even more difficult to even try to propose one of those small tax increases that shouldn't be on the table at all. And certainly you're going to see quite a bit of difference in certainly the state Senate.
But to wrap up our interview, getting back to what we talked about earlier, and to echo what Representative, soon-to-be State Representative Dr. Pettit said on the Fox Business Channel today, mm-hmm. and that is, you're hearing from businesses that the state has got to tackle this budget problem.
It must. You know, the loudest voice, and really, it was really a benefit that GE gave to Connecticut as it was leaving, by stating publicly, which big corporations like that never state this publicly, by saying, you know, your financial condition, the bad budgets that I see ahead, is dangerous to any business that has, you know, a future that they're looking towards of doing better, because they always will feel that, well, they become the next target of trying to balance the state budget on their backs. And when GE made that move and stated so publicly they're concerned about exactly what you mentioned, it really permeated our state, rank and file, people on the street knew something desperately wrong was happening. And from that point, it's happened one after another. This is the dangerous number that people should be looking at. We lost jobs 4 months in a row. 6,600 in September, 7,200 in October. 4 months in a row is no longer a blip. This is a trend, a negative trend. We have only regained 76% of the jobs lost since the recession. Massachusetts has regained 300%. General average is 170% nationwide. We very well, according to one of our chief economists in Connecticut, Nick Perna, who's actually in my district up in Richfield, predicted that we could very well be seeing a recession in Connecticut as the rest of the country has rebounded and is doing better. This is a clarion call for change of mindset, and I'm hoping that they hear it and that my colleagues in the House and Senate will heed that warning.
Well, as of now, Senator, as you know, this year the state has had just 3,000 jobs created, which is really a blip on the radar screen. That's not much at all.
Oh, it is not. Not given what has been happening nationwide. And as I said, just look next door to your own neighbors. And, you know, Connecticut is an anomaly. It's really stuck in the mud. And it's because of these bad budgets, bad policies, anti-business attitudes, and that has really had not just the GEs of the world, but smaller companies either closing up shop or moving them out. Too many of them in my district. And those job losses also then create a hostile environment for those that are remaining, and certainly not a great place for young graduates to be attracted to and to get our economy back moving in the right direction. All of this negativity, however, I still, in my heart of hearts, believe that we can turn this ship around, and we need to do it. And we'll see by the policies that are being proposed by the rank and file legislators coming up in January. But before we even get there, we should be meeting right now. We should be meeting, if it means Thanksgiving or Christmas or Hanukkah, whenever, things are that important, things are that bad. We should be front and center and show the public that the state is serious about fixing their problems.
All right, Senator, thanks for illuminating this story for our audience. And as always, thanks for being a guest on the program, and you have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. I know we all have personally things that we are very grateful for, and we have to keep that in mind as well.